This is 98.1 FM Raglan Community Radio, Irirangi o Whaingaroa. Hello, kia ora, my name is Jason. I teach holistic health and healing, and welcome to Your Health, Your Choice, a show that guides you on your healing journey, helping you choose your own healing path. And today, to help us on that path, I have from the other side of the Pacific Rim, the wonderful, beautiful, talented Anna Vocino. Thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Jason. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been listening to you and your co-host Vinny on your podcast for such a long time now. How long has that been going?
We have been doing it for over 11 years, which is, we've seen, you know, podcast 2.0, 3.0, pod fade, all we've seen everybody come and go with podcasts, but we're still doing it every week. And we do fresh content every week as well. We very rarely will put up a best of.
Yeah. I started my healing journey about 2011. And I started to get into podcasts about paleo and Western A. Price and real food, seeing food as medicine for the first time.
Yeah.
But it took me a while. And now you've got a company that makes awesome organic sauces and spices. You've got two cookbooks. You're doing a lot in this space, which is great. Are you able to share how you started off and what got you into health and healing?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I've always loved food, but I also, it's like, that's not a hot take. Like, everybody loves food. Like, I've never met somebody who's like, I mean, food's all right. I could take it or leave it. But like, if you're that person, please tell me what your secret is, because I love food. And I've gotten better, by the way. I do fasting from time to time and I've gotten better at it, but I'm always like, wow, people who fast every day. I'm like, you guys are strong. Strong-willed people. But yeah, I've always loved food. And so in 2002, I was diagnosed with celiac disease, which is an autoimmune disease. And I didn't think I was showing any symptoms. And I was 28. So I think I was just kind of in that mindset of, well, I'm so young, I'm sure I'm fine. You just kind of power through because your energy at that point outweighs any bad stuff that's happening, you know? Yeah. And so I didn't realize that all the abdominal stuff, let's call it intestinal, whatever you want to call it, all the sinuses, all the respiratory stuff, all of the symptoms that I was having were in line with some symptoms that you would have if you're diagnosed with celiac disease.
Yeah.
But then there's some that weren't. Like I've only had two migraine in my entire life. And migraine is like something that's very typical with celiac. So, you know, and if it goes undiagnosed, it's basically wherever you're weakest in your body is where it's going to kind of manifest itself. So the immune system attacks the villi in the small intestines, and it only is preventable when you don't eat gluten or other foods that inflame the immune system. So anybody with autoimmune who's dealing with a tamped up immune system, you got to start to look for answers. So I think that was the beginning of looking for answers. But from a gustatorial standpoint, and I don't know if that's a word, but I made it up. Thank you. From a taste standpoint, I was not going to be robbed of the experiences. You know, I was like, I went to Whole Foods near my house in Pasadena and got this $17 bag of cookies. I don't know what the conversion rate is, nor, you know, that was 20 years ago. So whatever it is in today's fiat currency, it was a lot of money to spend on some trash cookies. They were disgusting and I was very upset. I made that like vow in that moment, like, I'm going to make gluten-free food taste good. And I started to blog about it. And, you know, my background's entertainment. So I've worked as an actor and as a voice talent, as a comic for my entire career. And I'm very lucky that I've been able to do that. And so, but the thing is, you've got to wait for the phone to ring when you work in entertainment, especially if you're working as talent, you got to wait for the phone to ring. So gluten-free food blogging was very easy to do in my free time. And when Vinny, my podcast co-host, came along and asked me to co-host his podcast and produce his podcast for him, I was like, no, that's a lot of work, bro. As you know, Jason, it's a lot of work to consistently do a podcast. But then I read his book, Fitness Confidential, which I always talk about on every interview I do because it's the book that kind of changed it for me. And I said, yes, of course. And he was the first one. And I'd always messed around with diets despite always being thin. I was still always on a diet, maybe as a background, as an actor, as a ballerina. There was just constant dieting. It was sickening in my head.
Yeah.
So Vinny was the first one to present, you can use food as medicine, like you mentioned earlier. You can use, you can eat food that's real food and actually heal your body. And at the very least, if you can't heal your body, that's now the new normal. Like, you just, you, if you want to have a shot at healing your body, you need to care, you know, be careful about what goes in your body and be really precious about it. So I changed my entire focus to from just gluten-free to grain-free and low carb. So that's where we are today. Now I've turned it all into cookbooks, and I have a third one on the way, and then the sauce and spice company, like you mentioned. So it kind of evolved naturally, but also in a way where, you know, I never saw it coming, other than the thread that I could say I always have loved to cook.
Yeah.
And it's instant gratification. And let me tell you, when you do work in entertainment, you get a lot of either disappointing calls or no calls. So being able to create something fast in the moment, like food wise, is a very satisfying thing.
Yeah. Hey, so with gluten-free, are you also, because I know a lot of people get cross-reactivity with the dairy, are you dairy-free as well?
My hesitation means, yes, I should be, but do I always eat dairy-free? No. I mean, listen, I have since developed a second autoimmune, so I do need to be careful. I can't go out of control with anything. Like if I'm going to put life into living and have some carbs, I'm not like most people. I have to just, so my crazy out of control is when I put heavy cream in my coffee sometimes, you know what I mean? Like that's woo. Isn't she nuts? You know, I can't over consume anything. I can't binge. Let's put it that way. Cause my body is literally, it will rebel on me. So yes, I'm supposed to be dairy free, but dairy free is my like one final temper tantrum where I'm holding out, but it's not good for me.
Yeah.
And cross reactivity is a thing.
Yeah. I don't have celiac, but I got gluten sensitivity and also dairy sensitivity. For me, the gluten tends to affect my moods, and dairy tends to affect my appetite. It makes me want to eat more.
It really does, doesn't it?
For me,
anyway. It makes you want to peck around. And if you have too much cheese or dairy, you start to notice you'll peck around more for more food.
And I think my issue is getting eating too many calories. So just eating more than I really need. Like I feel satisfied and full, and yet I want to eat. So there's this weird thing going on where I need to get off dairy to get rid of that.
It's got to be something having to do with the dairy. I agree. And I've just noticed too from a, and by the way, if anybody is new to this and they're like, hey, I just gave up the carbs, don't worry about it. You'll start to tweak on it as you go through. But I don't want to scare people off, especially people who have children diagnosed with celiac and then they find out about cross reactivity and the kids have already like, they can't have pizza at their schools. They can't have cupcakes and stuff like that they're used to having. And I'm like, it's okay. But my little niece who is now almost 14, she, at 10 days old, was diagnosed with gluten and dairy intolerance. She was vomiting blood at 10 days old from gluten and dairy molecules passing through the breast milk of my sister-in-law. And let me tell you what, a 10-day-old puking blood is a horrible thing to witness. However, the fact that they could figure that out and change her diet from day 10 of her time on this earth, and now the kid is thriving, she doesn't know anything else. You know, she's gluten and dairy free for life.
Yeah.
And I love that for her, but you know, it's hard when you're a parent trying to figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I went gluten free for 5 years and I reframed it in my head. Whenever if I saw something with gluten, like I really love croissants and pastries. That became cardboard to me. Like if someone offered it to me or if I saw it around and smelt it, it was just, oh, there's that cardboard smell. Or there's a smell, you know. So
That's a great way to put a new anchor in your brain.
Yeah, it's like a Jedi mind trick myself to not see it as something that I used to see it as. And it worked. And I broke that 5 years in Europe and I didn't have any major issues. And I'm guessing the gluten there is a lot different to how it's done here in New Zealand and America and Australia.
I think it's a lot
more hybridized and a lot more gluten as well. Like they try to get more, you know, stretch in the dough.
I saw some TikTok video someone forwarded to me. It was like the ingredients in McDonald's fries in one of the European countries, I can't remember, it was like potatoes, salt, and oil. I don't even know what kind of oil. I don't know if it was a toxic seed oil. I don't know, but just three ingredients right there. And then the ingredients in McDonald's fries in the States was 19 ingredients. And it's like, just from that standpoint, it's too much. Like we're just putting too much in the food. Like we're putting stuff that's not food in our food and then frying it in seed oils.
Do you think Americans lead the way in that?
Lead the way in the processed foods?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't want to say it,
yeah, I mean, I can say it. I'm American. I can throw my country under the bus. No, listen, I mean, I had to come to terms with, we have the FDA here in the States that's supposed to be protecting us with their regulations. And I definitely had that moment of like, well, wait a minute. When I found out that olive oil in the States can be cut up to a certain percentage and they don't have to disclose it on the label, as long as it's not one of the nine major allergens, they don't have to disclose it. So as long as they're not using peanut oil to do the cutting, which they wouldn't, they use the, industrialized processed descented seed oil, so you can't tell, and they add deodorizers and colorizers and all this stuff. And so I was just shocked. I was like, why? But don't they have children that they don't want to feed that junk to? And apparently it doesn't matter.
But also, aren't there
So
laws to prevent that cutting, to prevent that misleading?
no.
Oh, so you could actually mislead
You
it
would think
in your own products, if you wanted to.
that's why it became very important for me.
Yeah.
And even in the process of making my products, you have to find the right partners because I don't have a commercial kitchen in my house to make sauces and spices. I've got to partner with somebody who has the ability to do that. So they have to understand what my goal is with keeping things sugar and grain free, for keeping, sneaky little preservatives. Or a good example with spices is they put in things like brown rice hulls, different anti-slip agents,
Whoa.
because when a bunch of spices are moving through manufacturing equipment, it can clog up the equipment because spices are sticky. Think about the last time you cut up garlic, or onions. It's sticky. It's the oligosaccharides, right? It makes your hands sticky and you wash your hands and you still smell the garlic on your hands. That's a natural property of that food. So they put in anti-slip agents to make the manufacturing process easier. So I have to find somebody who's not going to insist on doing that. I have to find somebody who gets what I'm trying to do and won't put it in there and understands like we're doing something different here. And most manufacturers won't do it, but then there are people who get it and want to be a part of it, which is great. And I feel really lucky to have partners in the sauces and the spices and eventually in the dressings that we're coming out with.
It sounds like a massive paradigm shift for a lot of manufacturers and in the
Yeah.
food industry as a whole, because it's all about speed, money, making
Right.
it easy. But real food isn't that fast.
No, it's not. Real food is slow food. And
Yeah.
also it's there's a sanitization process that happens when the consumer sees the food. Like we're used to buying a spice mix and it's perfectly powdery and just lovely and just pours out, or you scoop your tablespoon in there and but real food, like salt, when you're in humidity, it clumps. Like I know that when I was a kid, my mom would put white rice in the salt so that it wouldn't get so humid, so you could pour it out of the salt shaker. So if things clump, I'm always like, well, just jam a fork in there. Like you can declump it. It's not hard. But my business partner's like, well, if I got that, I would be like, this clumped. I don't like it. So, we've become so desensitized to the properties that food actually exercises as food because it's been sanitized.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, I was going to say something about
I
people
know.
that sort of act that way. I don't like it, but just stick to your fake food, I suppose.
Well, yeah, I think it's an interesting thing, and unfortunately, it's taking people getting really sick for
Yes. Yep.
them
That's
to
what it
look
took
for
for me.
alternate answers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like fully depressed for 16 years and had all these dark thoughts and. It was when I was at home alone, just crying, and there was no one around that I
Oh.
realized actually no one's hurting me but me. Like it took that I'm in pain, I'm blaming, but there's no one here to blame. And then it sort of
Right.
clicked for me, and then I started to go down, okay, food and health and breathing and movement. But yeah, you're right, it takes that
All of
rock
those
bottom.
things. You need all of those things, by the way.
Yeah.
And for me too, I struggled with depression. Everybody in my family, other than me, I believe is on an antidepressant. It's, it doesn't, and it doesn't surprise me. We have a lot of things that are very stressful and sad that we don't handle our feelings well. And so for me, it changed my mental health to shift my diet and take the processed foods out. It just completely was a game changer. Is it perfect? No, I still have to do movement. And by the way, if I don't do exercise every single day, I can get depressed or anxious. So it's like all of it has to happen. But definitely there was a shift in, I felt like I could sustain the breath of fresh air and live my life as opposed to just always being depressed and really tying it to food. And I wish that my mother had that experience because she was diagnosed with celiac before I was, and she was a sugar addict. And it was really, she really struggled her entire life, and it wasn't good.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's like my mum as well. They've been on it longer, so it's harder for them to get off it, which makes total sense. But yeah, I was just going to say, there's a lot of studies coming out recently showing how movement and exercise is better, not just the same, but better than some mood altering medications, you know? So that's something to look into, is exercise. I believe it. Yeah.
You know, I clicked on an article the other day and I couldn't believe it because right now in the States, and I don't know if it's the same way in New Zealand, is Ozempic and Wegovy and Mounjaro, are they sweeping your nation yet?
No, I haven't heard those.
Okay.
Oh, well, they could
what
be.
They are these injectable drugs, semaglutides, and what they do is a number of things. The way my doctor explained it to me, and by my doctor, I mean Dr. Kipper, who I podcast with. He's also my doctor. So I podcast with my doctor, which is awesome because then I can text my doctor whenever I'm like, I saw this thing. What does it mean? So the way Dr. Kipper explained to me is Wegovy, Ozempic, and Mounjaro is the new one, like Kilimanjaro. Okay. They're all approved for type 2 diabetes treatments, and some of them are being approved now for weight loss, and there are shortages of them. You inject them, and what they do is they keep you from feeling hunger signals. They work on your insulin resistance. They actually temporarily make your stomach feel full. And so some of the side effects from that are projectile vomiting, diarrhea. Some of the illness that can occur are pancreatitis, which is ironic because it's working on the pancreatic cells, you know, for the insulin resistance. Yep. So, I mean, I'm not going to obviously explain, I'm not a scientist. I'm not going to explain all the things. However, it will work very quickly for people, for them to drop some weight. But then the moment you go off of it, or let's say you've been on it for like a year, it stops working. You have to take more. You have to take more. Or you decide, I want to go off of it. And of course, they always say, this is supposed to go along with diet and lifestyle change. And not everybody complies with diet and lifestyle changes. And so these drugs have become very popular in the US. It's hard to get a hold of them. There's shortages. And I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon, unfortunately. But then, so I click on this article. So that's just to give you the background info.
Yeah.
I click on this article that says, this method is 50% more, as twice as effective as Ozempic and the other semaglutides. And I clicked on it because I was like, I hope they're going to say making diet and lifestyle changes, like take out the processed foods. And the article was basically the only thing that's doubled the effectiveness of these drugs is to get the bariatric surgery. And I was like, what are we doing?
No.
What are we doing? This is crazy.
Everything seems to be pointing toward a particular industry and how they can make money. But and what a lot of people
can we try it?
Yeah,
but we try it first.
A lot of people don't realize with medications is there's not one effect. There's 1,000 effects. There's one of them they can market and make money, and the others they call side effects. But it's not true. There's all these effects. One they can market to you and make money. So a lot of people don't realize. Oh, so this thing does all of these things. They're going to sell me on this one thing, but I could actually get all of these things as well. And a lot of them include death.
Well, that's true. And I think that what I hope to bring to people is hopefully an idea of them feeling more empowered. I want to empower people that they can make some food, because I think we've also gotten away from getting in the kitchen and getting our hands dirty. Yeah. I mean, figuratively, don't cook with dirty hands. You know what I'm saying? But getting in there and making some food and seeing how good things can taste and how much better you feel when you are keeping an eye on your ingredients instead of, you know, just relying on convenience food, processed food, pre-prepared food, when you don't know what people have put in there. So, you know, it's really hard to make these changes, and everybody wants the magic pill, the potion, the powder. Everybody wants it.
Yeah.
And so far I have yet to see anything that works as well as saying, I am going to take full hard responsibility for what I put into my body. Yeah. And it's a lot of work because we are taught to not pay attention and instead you know, pay attention to these shiny things over here and just eat the convenience food and the fast food, you know? And so it takes some retraining of the brain.
Now, you're right about cooking. I think it's a, I think it's part of our nature to be able to prepare and cook food and to innately know what it is we need, but we're so far disconnected from who we are and what we're, you know, here to do that we've totally forgotten. And and a lot of people are scared now. You know, I went to a friend's 30th once, and he'd never used the barbecue in his whole life. And I was just mind boggled. You never used the barbecue. You've never cooked meat on fire. And to me, it's simple. Eh? It's like,
that's what we're supposed to do. Humans are supposed to cook meat on fire.
I just couldn't believe it. And to me, cooking is one of those skills that every person should have. Even the most basic thing, like just get a slow cooker, put some veggies and meat, done. 8 hours later, it's cooked by magic or something. But it's too slow, right?
I love it. I made a roast the other day. I had a half a bottle of Syrah that never got drank, which, by the way, and if anybody appreciates wine, my husband and I are those a-holes who will open a bottle to literally just taste it, and we won't finish but half the bottle in a couple of days, so it goes bad. But the good thing is that I make really nice red wine vinegar, which is just put the wine in a mason jar, put some cheesecloth over it. 3 weeks later, you have vinegar. Like, it's not hard. It's not like a recipe you need to make. But it's better than any store-bought vinegar, right? And so I just took a roast and cut it up and put about a half a cup of that vinegar over it and seasoned it really well and just cooked it in the slow cooker. And it was, oh my God, like to die for. But you forget that, like, you're like, oh, something like that seems like you would pay $40 for your plate at the restaurant. And it was like, nope, the roast was $17. The wine left over. I didn't even use up all that. It was a half a cup, you know? So it's interesting to think about. I think people too, when you said about the barbecue, I think people are afraid to grill and to barbecue. They think there's going to be some secret or they're going to mess up the meat. I think meat really scares people. They think they're going to spend all this money on the meat and they're going to mess it up. But if you buy fatty cuts of meat, like dark meat, chicken, fatty cuts of beef and pork, the fat will save you from messing anything up. The fat is what keeps it from becoming like,
as well.
And the seasoning as well. Exactly. Yeah. So don't be afraid. You got to get in there and you got to create that little fold in your brain because you need to be able to feed yourself and your fam.
And I think people get it mixed up with baking where there's all the specific measurements and how to do things. Whereas cooking is more of an art. You just try this and try that and, you know, see how it goes.
The most tedious part of the cookbook writing process is when I have to take all my recipes and actually remake them several times with the exact proportions because I never measure anything until it's time to write the recipe. And then obviously people are going to be following recipe. I want to make sure that it's perfect as is, but it is really funny when I'm like, oh, I have to use a tablespoon. Because savory cooking is very forgiving. You can, and I always tell people, don't be afraid. When you get my cookbook, sub out the proteins. You don't like chicken, make it with salmon. You don't like beef, make it with a pork chop. I don't care what, you know, oh, you like this thing, but you want to add mushrooms? Do it. I love it. That's how recipes evolve. That's how traditions evolve. That's how, you know, people argue over traditional this, that, or the other thing. I'm like, who cares? Make what you want to make. Make it accessible to everybody.
Yeah. And you can make like one piece of meat many different ways by using different oils, different seasonings, different way of cooking. You could, you know, roast it. You could steam it. It's this, I guess you just got to get started, right? You got to get in there and break a few eggs.
Absolutely.
Oh, God.
Yes.
You also have your own show where you talk to people. Is it Table Talk? Eat Happy Kitchen Table Talk on your
Substack? Eat Happy Kitchen Table Talk. Yeah, I started interviewing people on my own and I just turned it into a thing. And now I love it. talking to the people.
I love it too. Something that came out, which I sort of come to realize recently myself, is that a lot of science is actually done on men and not on women. I was like, well, that's so true. So when you get all these recommendations based on science, it's actually not applicable to half the population.
Right.
It's like, wow. So, and of course,
I mean, think about it. If they're doing a bunch of low carb studies on men and not including women, or they're doing men and women, if we don't even know. If estrogen and progesterone, the two active hormones in women that are active at different times of the month, by the way, when in their cycle are they doing the experiments? Like, we don't know. You know what I mean? Like, there's stuff that's that specific, but it also might explain if you heard a particular diet's really good and you've tried it, it could be the female male thing, that some things, because like we hear all the time in our community, my husband and I started NSNG, no sugars, no grains. That's Vinny's thing. We started NSNG together, and my husband like lost 20 pounds in a month, and I barely lost three. That's what the wife says. And we're like, I know. Women are a little more complicated and it takes longer. Yeah. However, they always then write, but I feel better. My hands aren't swollen, or my feet aren't achy when I wake up, or my cycle has seemed to even out, or my skin's gotten better. And I'm like, that means it's working. Mm. It's just, it might take a little longer for the weight part to manifest itself. So ladies, stay the course.
Yeah. I always like to say it's not about losing weight to get healthy. It's about getting healthy and then you lose the weight.
Mm-hmm.
It's a consequence of health is weight loss. And it takes time.
Yes, it does take time.
Coming back to this time thing.
Yeah, well, you know, it took a while for us to mess our bodies up. It's going to take a while to heal them, and that's okay. And I think that, you know, that temptation, especially, I can't speak to the male experience, but I know that as a woman, I love jumping on the scale every morning, and I had to stop myself from that insanity. Even from, again, the hormonal perspective, you could be waffling 3 to 5 pounds every day just based on a different water weight hormonal situation. And that's like, what? I didn't lose any weight. You know, and then you do that thing of like, say nothing works. I'm going to eat 10 pizzas. And it's not a healthy boomerang situation to be in to do that.
And then you get into the sort of self-hating cycle or nothing works cycle, this sort of lost and frustrated cycle. And that's exactly what those food people want. They want you depressed sad and angry so you can eat more.
They do. They want to sell you the stuff.
Yeah.
How are we going to sell? I mean, the stuff that comes up in my feed is absolutely insane. Gummies that are supplements. What was the one that came up yesterday? I even sent it to my friend because I said, I'm sending this to you. Because sometimes you know how you get an Instagram ad, but then you can't find it again if you don't know what the thing. So I sent her the ad so I could find it again. It was for some oat bars, like snack bars made from oats that have plant sterols in them that are claiming that they will reduce your cholesterol. And it was just absolute garbage. Like just, I didn't even need to taste them to know, number one, they taste like crap. Number two, they're not going to do what they say they're going to do and could actually be not good for you.
I mean, is that still a thing, trying to lower your cholesterol? I thought that was all done and dusted now.
Oh no, we're not done with that.
Oh, God.
We're not done with that. They're going to be talking about cholesterol.
Until they can stop making money from it, I suppose.
Right, exactly.
Are you doing any fasting yourself?
Yeah, so I interviewed Dr. Mindy Pels recently for my table talk for my Substack. And I read her book, Fast Like a Girl. So I've been doing the fasting tied to the cycle because my functional medicine doctor told me, I need you to stop doing intermittent fasting because you've been doing it for so many years and all you're doing is spiking your cortisol and your body's like, you're so stressed, we're not going to allow you to lose any weight. Mm. But I was like, well, I just came at it from the idea of like, if I just go low carb, harder, faster, stronger, it'll work. And it didn't. And in fact, it had an opposite effect on me. And so that's why I'm very vocal about like, hey, if something's not working and you've really worked the program, talk to the doctor, listen to more interviews, read the books, like find out, because there could be something that's happening. And so, and I have had I go and pay for blood tests because I get to talk about it on the air. So it's, I like to talk about my experiences because if there's one woman out there who's listening and going, oh, that's me, that's my experience, then we won't lose her. I don't want her to go back and just be like, well, I'm just going to go do Weight Watchers again because restricting. I always say you can't hate yourself thin, but that's what the restricting is. You're basically hating yourself because who would starve themselves for that long? Now, that's different than intentional fasting. I want to be really clear about that. So restricting your calories on a daily basis so that you're lowering your metabolic set point, you're screwing up your metabolism, it does not work. It'll work in the short term.
Yeah.
And it will just screw you up until you can go back to a place where you can repair your metabolism. So I am specifically using Dr. Mindy Pels' fasting protocol to fast at certain times of the month. And then what I have to get over and is eating then at certain times of the month. And so I've had what I was saying with the blood tests, I have had trashed progesterone for about 7 years since I basically started intermittent fasting like a boy does. And it was not working. And I didn't put it together about that. So I am actually really eager to go get the progesterone tested after trying her protocol, which is basically intermittent fast during this time of the month. Do not fast during this time of the month. And so we'll see what happens. I'm an N equals one experiment. We'll see what happens. But yes, I do like fasting for specific things. Oh, and the other thing that happens too, for me, my stomach feels better after I fast. It was 24. I did a 4-day fast one day. That wasn't for me. I don't like the long fast, but my stomach felt so good after it. And like, even like just the bloating went down, like it just felt better. And then I read in Dr. Mindy's book where basically you're helping to repair your gut microbiome when you fast. Just take a break. Those bacteria will actually sort themselves out. And I was like, oh, no wonder my stomach felt better.
You can actually change your population based on what you eat for like 3 days or something.
Isn't that crazy?
It doesn't take that long.
Well, you know, I have a lot of folks who listen to me who are carnivore. And I've done carnivore experiments as well, because I got to see what everybody's doing. I got to try all the things, right? Mm. And it's very interesting because everybody says they do carnivore for a while and then they try some vegetables and they get really sick. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I talked to my doctor about it. And she said, you absolutely have to take some enzymes, because your gut flora is so smart that after 3 days, they're like, okay, you're not going to put vegetables in me. We're going to get rid of those bacteria that you need to digest vegetables. So then when you reintroduce them, all of a sudden you get sick. But if you have some enzymes. And I was like, oh, I'm glad I knew that going into it.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with carnivore. There's nothing wrong with vegetables. There's nothing. I'm not demonizing anything, because everybody has different choices of what they want to do and what feels good in their tummies. But just knowing something like, oh, if you have digestive enzymes, if you're going to go back and forth for extended periods of time, that might help the transition.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're making me think. I started out doing digestive enzymes because I read about them, and that's probably what helped me heal. I might need to go back there again, I think. I'm getting a bit up there in age now, so maybe
it's almost like a tune-up
enzyme support.
Yeah, it's like a tune-up with the digestive enzymes. I have two too, and I think, I mean, it depends on where your body is doing its thing. But for me, definitely in the gut, it's weakest. I have a tendency to go to leaky gut if I am overdue the dairy or, you know, then I'm like, time to rein it in, honey. You got to get it together.
Yeah, for me, it's that sort of bloated sensation and then skin outbreaks. It's like, ah, okay, there's something going on there.
Yep.
I heard you say in one of your table talks this term, geriatric pregnancy.
What I know. Isn't that a horrible phrase?
What does that mean? Can you explain
it? Okay. Geriatric pregnancy, I think they've revised the language that they use.
Is this coming from medical?
No, it's from the medical establishment.
No way.
It's a woman who gets pregnant after age 35.
Geriatric pregnancy.
35. Okay. Now, I'm from the big city. A lot of women wait until late 30s to start having kids and trying to get pregnant.
Yep.
Now, the geriatric pregnancy, the idea is, and I hate this so much, the idea is at the age of 35, slowly but surely, the perimenopause changes are happening with women. So that's why it becomes more dangerous. They just monitor you more closely. Dangerous. They might do more tests on the baby. They do amniocentesis or things like that. You know, they just, it's just a,
but this is like a one size fits all thing, right?
Hmm.
It's a one size fits all. I know some 25-year-olds who are so unhealthy that they shouldn't be, you know, they can't get pregnant. And there are some 45-year-olds that are really healthy that they could easily have 10 babies.
We don't, I cannot figure out the pregnancy thing. The number of friends that I've had who just cannot get pregnant, try everything possible, then they adopt and then they get pregnant. That's happened so many times. The people who clean up their diet and still can't get pregnant, but there are way more people who clean up their diet and then their PCOS goes away and they can get pregnant. Fertility is a real thing. And I'm going to be honest with you. I was one of those a-holes who, I was 25 and I was eating whatever I wanted and got pregnant by surprise. And it wasn't until after my daughter was born that I was diagnosed with celiac. And they're like, you need to clean up your act. I had an absolutely miserable, terrible pregnancy and I would never do it again. But now I understand it's because I was living with autoimmune and wasn't diagnosed.
I mean, if your health was at a different level, you probably would have had a much easier time. Yeah.
And I would have probably had a sibling for Lucy, but I was like, I ain't doing that again. That's crazy. You gals are nuts.
So are you low carb now?
Yes.
What about keto? Are you keto or just low carb?
You know, it's interesting. I haven't done it today, but I did it yesterday afternoon and I was 0.9 on the meter. So I'm always at some level. I know that like you want one, what isn't it like 1.5 to 3 on the millimolar thing? But
yeah.
I mean, for the most part, I'm almost always in ketosis unless I'm like intentionally like this next weekend is my birthday. I will be having cake and I will be enjoying it and I will definitely get kicked out of ketosis. But I think, you know, I like what Ben Azadi says and a few other people are now talking about flexibility, metabolic flexibility. Because I think in the early days when Vinny and I would podcast, you know, we didn't know, like, is it dangerous to go into ketosis and then come out, when actually like it is a lot of Dr. Paul Saladino, a lot of folks are saying like, it's actually good to be able to be metabolically flexible. So I think that I've been doing it for so long, I can get into ketosis really easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't go deep unless I'm fasting.
Yeah. 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 I can find myself getting there without even trying, but then, you know, I'm not a specific diet. I tend to just eat, go where the day takes me. If it's a gym day, I'll eat more, perhaps more carbs. Right. If it's a relaxing day, I might not have anything or just fast. It just depends, right, really. And I think there's a lot of people who are afraid of fasting or afraid of skipping a meal because, you know, they're going to lose their gains or they're going to feel horrible. And they might, but if you keep practicing right. that and if you eat less of this and skip a few meals here and there, your body will get used to it.
It's not as scary as it seems. I just think it has to come from a place where it's intentional and you're not restricting because you're trying to either punish yourself or be on a diet. Like there's a difference in the mindset of it. I will say, if you're new to low carb, I would absolutely mess around with trying to get into ketosis so that you can feel that feeling. Mm. So you can understand what it means to be fat adapted, what it means to have the brain fog clear up, what it means to, like, you're not intentionally skipping a meal, but you're like 2 o'clock and you're like, oh, I forgot to eat. And you don't really think about it, but then you have a bite of food and you're like, oh God, I'm hungry. I need to eat. Like, you know what I mean? And I think it's good to have those experiences in your body so that you know what that's like, because there will be moments in your life where you will need to fast. Maybe you're having blood work done. Maybe you're going to have a colonoscopy or something's going to happen, or you're going to be on an airplane and it's literally just trash food. And so you just want to like make sure that you're like, you know what? I'm going to wait till I get to my destination and then eat. So can you sit with actually being hungry for a minute? Because a lot of us get anxious when we eat the slightest hunger pang, and it feels threatening and it feels scary. And so what fasting does is it goes, okay, no, this is, you're telling your brain, This is a healthy, intentional thing that I am doing. So do not freak out. And then when your brain freaks out, you kind of train yourself to not freak out. When I had a colonoscopy a year and a half ago, they did an endoscopy and a colonoscopy. And I did the prep, you know, they tell you to eat a certain kinds of foods leading up to it. And then the day and a half before you fast.
Yeah.
And then they say, you can eat foods you can have popsicles, just don't have red and purple popsicles because it will mess with the camera lens looking in your colon, right?
Okay.
And I was like, popsicles? What? They're like, you can have, it was all sugary. I can't even remember, but it was all sugar foods. And then I was like, can I just have broth or like salt water? They're like, oh yeah, you can have that. But just don't, you can have Jell-O. That's the other one. You can have Jell-O. Just don't have red or purple Jell-O. And I was like, red or purple? Are we children? What are you talking about? Like red or purple Jell-O or any Jell-O. And so I went in so I had already had experience with fasting. So it wasn't that big of a deal. And I go in and I had a 9 a.m. Oh, the one thing I did do was I got up at 4 a.m. and I did a shot of espresso before my final, because they make you drink the drink that cleans you out.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm not missing my espresso. So I had my shot of espresso, did the drink, went in, had a 9 a.m. So by 10:30, 11 a.m., it was done, right? And I actually, even though they gave me the propanofol or whatever it's called, I can't remember the name, I was awake and asking the doctor questions like, hey, can I see the thing? We were talking about it. And he was like, you could tell he was weirded out because most people are just passed out for it. And then I kind of, they rolled me in, like, okay, you're done or whatever. And I was like, great, let's go. Call my husband. I'm done. And they were like, do you need to like chill for a second? I was like, no, I'm good. Like, I was like, I'm fine. Like, and I was watching the other people wake up from having the procedure, and they were so hungry and they were just absolutely spent. And I was like, oh, that's because they've never gone a day without food. And it's really hard if you haven't practiced it. You know, it really will drain you.
People don't realize that digestion is a massive energy sink. It takes a lot to digest food. And when you're not digesting, then your body can go into anabolic phase and repair and do all these things that it's been wanting to do for a long time. But if you're, especially with snacks, and I think that's another American invention, is snacking.
Oh God, we're professionals at it.
When there's no time between meals or between snacks to go into the anabolic phase and you're just catabolic with the digestion, nothing gets fixed or repaired or built up. It's just all breaking down and throwing out and elimination. And eventually stuff gets built up, like a lot of gunk gets built up because you're not fasting, you're not having time and space between meals. I heard some people eat as late as 10 o'clock at night and they go straight to bed. Or some more like, you should wait 3 hours after your last bite, then you should go to bed, you know.
Well, I think too, I've noticed that I have a tendency to get really peckish around 4:30 in the afternoon, right? I think that's very normal. And what I realized that I've had to do is, because I would want to go and have my low carb snack, so I'd make some salami, some nuts, some cheeses. No. What would wind up happening is that I would overeat that stuff and then have dinner an hour and a half later. You know what I mean? At 6 p.m. So you overeat at 4:30, and then by 6:30, I'm eating a whole meal. And so even though calories don't matter, overconsumption can matter. Does that make sense? So it's like, so now I know when that happens, hey, do you think you can wait until dinner to have your meal and just really let this thing stretch out so that you can let your leptin and your ghrelin do its thing that it's supposed to do, especially at hours 4 and 5 between your meals, your body's like really getting good and like revving up the hunger juices? Or do you have to, at the first moment of feeling hungry, go and like make a whole snack plate? Because that was me. I was making, and even though it was low carb, it was messing with my goals.
Yeah.
It was too much food.
So can you explain a bit what you mean by like calories don't matter until they matter because you've had so many of them?
I mean, I just,
because there'll be some people that are still in the calorie paradigm.
I either read a thing or watched a thing with Ted Nyman. Is that how you say his name? Nyman. He's a doctor here in the States, a low carb guy. And he has the PE ratio or PE energy. I don't know. I can't remember what it was. Protein energy ratio is what he talks about. Ah. And I really like him. He's a great guy. And, but he was talking about, you know, we could count 1200 calories or 1600. By the way, don't do 1200 calories a day. That's something that women are always told, eat 1200 calories a day or less, and then you'll lose weight. But really, like, and what you do is you join Weight Watchers. And what we would do is we figured out how to eat like a giant trough of a spinach salad with no dressing or anything so that you could eat like, you know, 2 brownies that are like 1.5 by 1.5, you know? And it's like, is that good? Are those a good example of good calories when you're not getting any protein? You're basically just trying to game the system so you can have the sugary treat, right? So calories don't matter in the sense of the traditional counting. What matters is the quality of food that you're having and the balance of food that you're having, right? And that being said, you could still overeat. However, it's a lot harder to overeat once you become fat adapted because your satiety levels feel pretty good. You feel fuller because you're eating some fat.
Yeah.
You finish your meal and you're like, okay, I'm done eating. When you're having just, you know, plain chicken breast and a spinach salad, and you're not allowed to have the olive oil or anything because you're trying to do low fat, you eat the whole plate of food, you choke it down, and you're still starving after you eat it. So if you feel more full after a meal, you're not going to be rushing out to eat anytime soon. However, that being said, you can still, you know, hey, I feel a little hungry, or I'm used to snacking. Or something else I noticed after doing this, when you're low carb and you're fat adapted, all of a sudden you'd notice all those times that you're emotionally eating or eating out of boredom, or maybe you got a phone call that upset you. there, I got a phone call one day that upset me. And I marched over to the fridge and I opened it up and stared at it. And then I was like, oh my God. And I put it together what I was doing. I'm not hungry. I am literally having an emotional reaction. And I marched over to the fridge to make it go away. And I never realized that I did that before. It was always unconscious. Oh, you know, first of all, I never processed the thing that happened that upset me. And then I would just overeat something to make it go away. So I was like hurting myself on both angles of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And everyone's got their own sort of vice. They go to the alcohol or they go to pop some pills or whatever it is. Yeah.
Go out and have a cigarette. Oh, I got that thing. It bugged me. I'm going to go have a cigarette. You're like, okay. It's not going to help.
But you know what? If I was ever going to have an addiction, I'd rather it be food, because at least I know that I can choose. Like, if I was to eat too much food, let it be real food, for one. It's a lot harder to exercise off, you know, smoking or alcoholism or all that sort of stuff. That you're not going to be able to get yourself back into health a lot quicker than just by choosing smaller meals, eating at the right time of day. Like, when you eat is a big thing as well.
Yeah. Well, listen, I've been reading, I just finished reading the book, Dopamine Nation, strong recommend. And that will make you go, oh, I'm doing okay with my addictions. Cause there's some stuff out there that is kind of crazy, and dopamine's a big, and by the way, another thing you can do with fasting is a dopamine reset of the gut and the receptors, which is kind of awesome. The gut and the brain connection. So, you know, but yes.
Is it, so fasting's part of that dopamine reset?
Yeah, you can, that from what I have read, yes, that will help reset you. Because you know how some people can just eat and they just have no feeling. They're eating great food and they just have no, like, it just doesn't do, like, they're just not having that rush of like eating something yummy anymore, like, because the dopamine's tapped.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm using the language incorrectly. Read that book and she explains it much better than I ever will.
Oh, is that Dr. Anna Lemke?
I think so, yes. Mm-hmm.
I think I don't know, maybe it's cold thermogenesis as well. Like, for me, I finish my shower on cold for like 60 seconds just to try and get that.
I love it. I started a cold plunge 2 months ago and I've been doing it every day. I love it.
Oh, nice.
I do love it. Again, because I've heard that it helps your immune system. So I was like, I need all the help I can get. Listen.
Yeah.
This thing ain't going to fix itself. Also too, what's with all the autoimmune? Like, what? There's so much autoimmune. People are really suffering. It's just crazy.
From my perspective, that's toxins, right? There's toxins in the body that aren't able to get out. So it's about flushing those, trying to find out how to get them out of the body. A lot of people will say it's, I follow some people that say there's no such thing as autoimmunity, but it's just toxins. And
neurotoxins, maybe. Microplastics. Yeah. What is it called? The estrogen.
Obesogens,
xenoestrogens. Yeah. I mean, there's so much crap out there. I just saw an article today about how much plastic is now in our brains, in our fatty tissue, and I'm just like, oh. Which is, by the way, why when I started the food company, I was like, we can't use plastic.
No,
I just can't. Like, but then everything in the grocery store is either in a plastic bag or a plastic canister or something, but we use recycled paper canisters with aluminum plugs for the spices and obviously glass jars for the jars of sauces. But it is interesting because I'll get feedback from people like, why aren't you just using a shaker? It'd be so much easier. And I'm like, because I'm trying to help your body.
That's a good point, though. There's so many toxins we're being assaulted by. It's logical that people are going to adapt to that in a way that we call disease, but it's actually your body adapting to something. That's what I've realized with depression and other mental illnesses. Your body's actually, it's your body's adapting to a way of living that is very foreign. It's very new. It's very wrong to our nature. So don't think you're in the wrong. Like, I realize now, I just wasn't in nature enough. I wasn't eating the right food. I wasn't connecting to the right people. We are an animal on this planet and we're meant to have a certain environment and connection to tribe. And when you don't have that, of course, things are going to happen and you're going to, you know, exhibit symptoms that are going to say, hey, something's wrong here. And to me, that's all disease and sicknesses. It's your body trying to communicate to you, something is wrong. Please change.
You know, when cholesterol was framed to me for the first time, when I first rendezvoused with the information that cholesterol is just a symptom of the body trying to protect itself from inflammation of the vascular walls, I was blown away, because it was always framed to me that, no, you're eating that thing. If you're eating that thing, it's going to immediately, like you're eating a cheeseburger, you're immediately wiping saturated fat on the inside of your blood vessels, when it doesn't even work that, like, not even, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's so funny how that became the popular wisdom for so long. It's like how, and it's still very much an uphill battle with discussing that kind of stuff, because also too, people don't want their vices taken away. They don't want their creature comforts taken away. And I understand it takes a while for people to come to terms with it. Sometimes people will hear a conversation like this, and it'll be the point where they're like, okay, I'm ready to make some changes. I'm like, that's awesome. That's great. We're here. And just know that's just the first step. A bunch of stuff will get uncovered. You know what I mean? People don't realize how much they're masking their depression, their anxiety, their childhood traumas with food, with alcohol, with all the things that we use to stuff the void, you know? And I'm like, don't worry. It'll be waiting for you, and you can handle it. You got this. You'll do it. You can do it. And if anybody's also listening and they're like, well, I did that, and then the thing happened, and then I went on a bender for 8 months and gained all the weight back, that's okay too. It's part of the process too.
Yeah.
Come back
now
around.
You know more.
Yeah, you know more
about yourself.
You know more about yourself. And I don't want anybody to beat themselves up about anything like that, because the point is that, are you right now in this moment going, you know what? I did that and I can undo it. Because you can. As long as I'm breathing air, I can try to fix the damage that I've done, you know?
Yeah. And you can start with your breath. If you don't want to do anything else, just sit there, be lazy, focus on your breathing.
So I think for me, I think I have, because I've always had respiratory issues, right? And I have asthma. And I think that I've had some long COVID issues from that. And I have noticed, so I've decided to do the cold plunges, right? And then I started the Wim Hof breathing. I know I'm like way behind on this. I know it's been 10 years everybody's been doing Wim Hof, but I don't know why. I was like, I'm not doing that. That's boys do that. I don't do that. Yeah. So I started doing it. And I notice already I can hold my breath longer. My lungs feel stronger and I don't sound as weak. You know what? I'm filming cooking videos, you know, because I put that on the Instagram, and I notice I'm like, like it sounds like, and I'm like breathing normally, but it sounds like I'm wheezing. Mm. And I was like, okay, girl, we got to work on this. Like, what is happening with your breath? Yeah. You sound like you're dying and gasping of air. And I didn't even realize it. You know, and that breathing stuff is powerful.
Yeah, I think it's more powerful than food, because in an instant you can change how stressful or how relaxed you feel, you know, through your breath.
Whereas
with food, there's a delayed reaction. It could be 3 hours, 3 days.
This makes me want to take deep breaths right now. I'm like.
Yeah. Yes. Nasal breathing, mouth closed, tongue on the top of your mouth behind your front teeth.
Have you seen these things?
What is that device? No.
So, you know, James Nestor, who wrote Breathe or Breath.
Yes. Great book.
He told Vinny to get one of these. And then I got one. And so, and we talk about whenever you get stressed, you're supposed to put it in like a mouth guard. And then the sound won't go through the mic, but I'll do it anyway, because it looks ridiculous. And if you're filming video, why not?
Has it got like a valve or something?
You can't hear it, can you, when I breathe?
So it's restricted. No. Does it force you to really go
I wish
hard?
That sound came through, because it's very like a whistling, almost a whistle. But yeah, it's really. Although too, I'm like, what kind of plastic is that? Is that safe? Because you're basically gumming
this
thing.
It's not BPA. It'll be all the other BPs.
Aren't they all BPs to some extent? Let's be honest. I don't think DuPont
probably
has our best interests at heart. No, that BP's the safe BP. You're fine. Don't worry about it, hon. You're cute.
It's the safe plastic.
It's the safe plastic.
Cool. I know this has been fun. This has been awesome. Thank you for coming on.
You're awesome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so where's the best place to point people to for you and your work?
Eathappykitchen.com. annavicino.com. We talked about the Substack. I post all my new recipes at annavicino.substack.com and my interviews, the table talks. And my new book doesn't come out till next year. So I'm just putting recipes at the Substack and loving it. And I'm on the socials, Instagram, cooking videos on YouTube. I want to demystify this cooking for low carb thing. It's pretty, I want you to get dinner on the table in 15 minutes, like, and really mean it and say like, this is going to be a yummy dinner and you don't have to buy my spices or sauces. I give you plenty of recipes that you can make stuff at home. So,
Okay. So a new cookbook coming out.
Yes. Low Carb Italian will be out September, 2024.
Let's hope we're still around.
Oh God, it's so far away. I know. I'm trying. This is where I need to exercise patience.
Yeah.
I'm still working on, I might be low carb for 10 years, but I have not worked on my impatience yet.
Well, there you go. There's always something.
There's always something. Right?
There's always something. All right. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you.
Thank you once again, Anna, for coming on. That was a very fun conversation for me. I really enjoyed it. You are a delight, and I love the knowledge that you're sharing and your wisdom and your experience and your health journey, and especially all your recipes that you have on your websites. I know you got two cookbooks. I have Eat Happy One. I haven't got your Eat Happy Two yet, but I will. But you know, I'm still going through the recipes on your website. When people say, I don't know what to cook, well, go to Anna's website. And yeah, and thank you for creating those real food products. I'm seeing those getting more popular around the world, and even here in New Zealand there are some great options, organic options, and even if they're not organic, there's just real whole food ingredients, and there is a shift happening out there, but it starts with you. If you don't believe in the political voting system, you can vote with your dollars at the grocery store, at the farmer's market, where your money goes, energy flows, and your health will follow whatever you invest in. So invest wisely in real food, in real health, and in wisdom. So go to Anna Vicino's websites and also her podcast with Vinnie Todorich. That's how I first came across her work, Fitness Confidential. Highly recommend. It's education, it's entertainment, and it's real, it's factual and fun. So what more can you ask for in that? But yeah, so that's it from me. Until next time, stay free, be yourself, know that you are loved, and that you are love. Kia kaha.